Today's Ringer MBA show is brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. People could get hurt or killed. You could get arrested, incur huge legal expenses, or even lose your job. If you think drunk driving is no big deal, you couldn't be more wrong. Drive sober or get pulled over. Learn more at nhtsa.gov. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Vernon. Joining me this week in the place of Kevin O'Connor is John Gonzalez from TheRinger.com. Hey, John.
Verno.
How's it going?
Excellent, my man. I'm going to try and probably fail to fill KOC's big-time shoes on this program, but we're going to give it an effort.
I'll get to Kevin later.
Yes, we have to talk some Kevin.
It has been slow NBA news for the last couple of weeks, which has been fascinating considering it seemed like there was a massive story every week for a couple of weeks until yesterday when there was kind of word on the street that Manu Ginobili was contemplating retirement. And then yesterday he makes it official and walks away. When you first saw that Manu Ginobili was retiring, what's the first thing that ran through your mind?
I felt bad for Shai. We're going to pour some of Shai's tears out for Manu, who's never going to play again. I wonder if we'll hear from Shai again. He wrote a wonderful story on TheRinger.com. You can check that out right now. The really funny anecdote about what Manu meant to San Antonio writ large, and then specifically to the Serrano family, the extended Serrano family, which I thought was pretty fantastic. But I was just thinking about like the impact that it has on that community. And then beyond that, what this means for the Spurs. I mean, is it like hard reset for the Spurs? Are they about to dip below the playoff line? Is this going to usher in the end of, say, maybe the Pop and RC Buford era? I just wonder how many ripple effects it has when you combine it with Tony Parker leaving and then obviously Kawhi getting traded.
Yeah, and you know Manu probably looked around and he's like, Tony Parker's gone, mm-hmm. and Timmy's gone, and Danny Green's gone, and Kawhi Leonard's gone. So it's like, I guess, like Patty Mills is like last man standing, I guess.
Yeah,
like
Patty's the last one.
Right?
And then beyond that, Verno, he's 41, and as a fellow 41-year-old, I am also ready for retirement. I don't have that same luxury as him. He can just go off and do whatever he wants. I'm going to work until I die. But I get it, man. I get it. Go do something else and have a good time.
You know, he is also one of the very few guys that played with one team his entire career.
Yeah.
And in fact, three guys that had played 10 years with one team are all lost this summer. Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and interestingly enough, DeAndre Jordan was another one. Now, Steph Curry becomes one, but here are the other ones that have played a decade in a uniform and never changed. Dirk Nowitzki, 21. Udonis Haslem, 16, Mike Conley, 12, Mark Gasol, 11, Russell Westbrook, 11, Steph Curry, 10. I mean, that's incredible. You got six players in the entire NBA. Six.
Yeah, it's a select group. But then on the other hand, I think to myself, like, I'm kind of surprised that there are that many and then the guys that you listed off are among them. Like, I can't believe Russell Westbrook has played that many years in the NBA already. And then beyond that, Conley and Gasol, I feel like that went quick. It went quick. And who knows, with those guys, it could be over this year. If things don't go right for Memphis, they might end up moving those guys. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a very select group, and there's something to be said about longevity in a sport, in athletics writ large, where, you know, that's not really something that generally ends up happening anymore. So for them to make it that long with those teams is really impressive. And again, it speaks to Manu, and like, they had an amazing run, and now it feels like it's really over.
Yeah, and if you go through like the, let's just say like last year's, we go through like top 10 leading scorers, right? Harden, he's changed teams. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis could have a chance. He could have a chance.
Yeah. I mean,
he'll probably get 10 in New Orleans. It'll be close.
I wonder if he wants that, you know? At what point does AD look around and go, it's time for me to go?
All right, so you got LeBron. Mm-hmm. He's already moved.
Yep.
Lillard, I mean, there were already rumors, right? Yeah, Lillard.
What would you do with that backcourt? Haley wrote about this for The Ringer, yet another ringer.com shameless plug, but it was a good piece. And there, you know, obviously your normal running mate KOC is always talking about blowing things up. Would you jettison one of them?
No.
You like to keep them?
Here's where I come in on this kind of stuff, okay? They ain't the problem. The problem's the rest of it.
Yeah.
The problem is Evan Turner. The problem is, you know, Yusef Nurkic. Talk to me about the rest of the roster. Yeah. Like, that's always the crazy thing. We focus so much on stars and the guys that get paid a lot of money. Tell me about how the rest of it, how you've built around it. I mean, no lie. Who's the third guy you would take off that team? I line them up on a wall, and now I take Lillard, you take McCollum, or vice versa, and now you get the third pick. Who you want?
It's slim pickings. I mean, it's not all for Rico Mino. They like Zach Collins. Maybe, God, when I go, maybe it's Zach Collins, I think that tells you quite a lot.
All right, so don't tell me. So that's what I'm saying. When everybody brings up McCollum and Lillard, tell me about the other 13 guys on the roster. We can't even decide who, you're not sure who you'd pick third.
I mean, if you were going to go just like right off the top of your head, it would be Yusef Nurkic, but I used to love Nurkic and I've since soured on him because he is kind of what he is, right? Like, he did help their defense when they plugged him in and they became a better defensive team, but he's a really traditional center in a league that continues to move further and further away from the basket with their bigs. So, yeah, maybe I'd roll the dice on Zach Collins, but your point is made. Your point is made.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to hurt Portland's fans' feelings, but I mean, that's the truth. There is no sure thing third player, much less as you get farther down the roster. But Lillard could make it 10 years in that uniform. Giannis, it's a possibility.
Yeah.
Durant's moved, as we know. Westbrook, we mentioned. Kyrie's already moved. And then you have LaMarcus Aldridge and Victor Oladipo. And then, by the way, the next one, DeMar DeRozan. So I guess our next chance would be Embiid, who's 12.
Yeah, and he had a couple of redshirt years there just to get it under his belt. But it's crazy that, you know, there's just such a select handful of players that get that opportunity to stay. You have a number of things have to happen. You have to be really good. You have to be on a team that needs your services. You have to fit in with the culture and the community. And then you have to get lucky too in a lot of ways, right? Because even if you're winning and you're prospering with that team, it doesn't mean necessarily that you won't just be tossed into a deal. Like, we saw what happened with, say, Isaiah Thomas when things were still going well with the Celtics and he felt betrayed. And we wrote a number of pieces for The Ringer about how loyalty and sports is really just this fanciful concept that never really existed, right? So you do have to get lucky too. I mean, there's a world, there's a scenario. Don't forget with the Mavericks. I mean, yeah, Dirk went 21 years, but remember before that he was with Michael Finley and Steve Nash, and those two guys didn't make it that long. So Dirk ended up staying and the other two guys didn't.
The other thing, you got to take less money.
Yeah, sometimes.
That's the story of a lot of these guys. Certainly with the Spurs guys, they could have made more money if they would have gone elsewhere.
Dirk could have several times.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And Manu, you know what strikes me beyond the, you know, played the whole career in a uniform and we don't see him. It's going to be weird to see Tony Parker in a Charlotte uniform this year. Just is. Just like it was weird to see Patrick Ewing in another uniform or Elijah Wan or whatever. And mostly we end up forgetting that and we think of them in the jerseys that they played most of their careers. But beyond the whole playing so long for one franchise, I am struck by the idea that I think Manu Ginobili, as the years go on, he will end up being colossally underrated. That's what I think. I think people are going to look and they're going to have their arguments because, you know, you look at the stats and it's like 13 points, you know, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, whatever it is. And he played like 25 minutes on average for a career. So he did what he did in 25 minutes, which obviously enabled him to play until he's 41 years old. But the numbers, when everybody gets into numbers arguments, they're not going to tell the story of this guy. They're just not. And people are going to look at, yeah, he was part of 4 championship teams, but he only made 2 All-Star games and right. He only did this and he only did, you know what I'm saying? And we will look back and I wondered if, tell me what you think about this. Let's say even the, I think the year that he averages most points is like 19 a game. He only played 30 minutes. So, I mean, you got guys that play like 10 more minutes than that, or certainly 5 to 8. And so what if he would have played 38 minutes a night? You know, what is he scoring then? Is he a 25, 27 point per game guy? And let me get your opinion on this, because I was talking to my buddies about this yesterday. Do you think he could have been the best player on an awesome team? Do you think that if Manu Ginobili went the Harden route and he, instead of being a cog, he would have gone to a team, because he's actually not totally unlike Harden, right? In the way that, you know, he's not the mega athlete, but gets by and obviously could score at a very high rate. If he would have just gone off and been the man somewhere, like he's the key guy, instead of 25 to 30 minutes a game, do you think he could have been, maybe not Harden MVP of the league, but do you think we're talking about him as a 25 to 30 point per game scorer?
I'm not sure. I think part of the question, the part about him being the best player on a great team, that's where I wonder. I think like he was already on a great team, and what he was great at doing was being the other guy, right? Like some, you, right. You mentioned it when we were talking about the Blazers, where, you know, they have two great players. Well, what about their other guys? Well, their other guys right. obviously aren't Manu Ginobili, and why he, part of the, why the Spurs became the Spurs is because they had the luxury of their other guy being Manu Ginobili, right? Like he was this guy who would come off the bench and would play 25 minutes and would do all the intangibles. And on the drive in here today, I was thinking about like, why do we love Manu Ginobili, and why is this such an outpouring of affection for him and this conversation about his career when he was sort of, you know, a six man. And part of it was because he did all these other things, and it was all, his greatness is rooted in that very thing, that it's hard to figure out the one thing that he did to elevate the Spurs or to be in this conversation. He was the intangible player. I mean, he was an amazing passer. And I think like he doesn't get enough credit for like those magical passes that he would throw, but it didn't really always show up in the box score. And you mentioned, you know, the best season that he had, he still didn't average 20 points per game. You know, the most assists that he averaged in a single season still had him under five. It was 4.9. He did that a couple of times, right? But he did all these other little things. And you went, oh, yeah, Manu's an amazing person to have on this team. So I don't know that I would say that he could have gone off and like carried a great team by himself. But that also was part of what made him great.
Sure. And the, you look, when you're talking about the numbers, he only had two seasons where he played more than 30 minutes per night, right? Gons, there were 71 guys in the NBA that averaged more than that just this year.
Yeah.
71. He only did it twice in a very long career from 2002 through 2017-18 season. And when you think about the way, I mean, obviously it's always hard to extrapolate. Like if we just say, hey, well, this is what he averaged playing 25 minutes. Is he just amazing at 25 minutes? And then if you played him at 37 minutes, that's LeBron led the league in minutes. He played 37 minutes a night. And Jimmy Butler and Giannis were right there too, at 37 minutes a night. Paul George, Damian Lillard, all those guys. So five guys in the league played 37 minutes a night. Well, what if I played him 37 instead of 25?
Yeah.
I don't know, right? Was he maximized doing what he did do, right? That if you played him the other 12 minutes, he wouldn't have been.
It's hard to know because that's the Pop effect, right? I mean, like you play right. on that team and you play for Greg Popovich and you're going to... Look, the Spurs were way, way, way ahead of the curve in terms of like managing minutes loads and how many games you're playing and the effect that it takes on your body, not just for a single season, but in terms of like the cumulative effect. And then like, you know, taking some time off and taking some minutes off and scaling back for the regular season so that it can benefit you in the playoffs. I mean, they were way ahead of the curve on that, so it's impossible to know. I will say, though, that I'm looking at this, and part of it is the Pop effect, and part of it was just Manu, too, right? Because he never, in his entire career, played all 82 games. And there were a lot of seasons where he'd play in the 70s, but then, you know, there were multiple seasons where he was injured and he, you know, he didn't get north of 60 games, or, you know, a couple where he played, you know, fewer than 50. So that's also hard to know too. What if he had been like slightly healthier at times? What if he had played for a coach who, like you said, was going to play him more than 25 minutes per game? I don't know. I will say this. I like the way that Manu's career panned out. You know, we could sit here and like do all these hypotheticals, but again, I think his greatness was rooted in the fact that his career zigged where everybody else would have zagged or tried to zag. Like that hunger to be a Harden and go be your own guy and lead your own team. He was like, nah, I'm good. I'm really good at this and I'm on a good team and I fit and it makes sense to me and I've had an amazing career and I'm cool with it.
He could have done probably more, probably could have made more all-star teams if he went elsewhere, but he cared about winning the most.
Yeah, and I think that's there's something to be said for that, right? I mean, like there are players who late in their career go ring chasing because they missed out on that. And he found a situation early on that was perfect for him and he was perfect for them. And it was this symbiosis. And he was like, let's not fuck with something that's good. I'm going to just stay here. And, you know, good for him and good for them. It worked out great.
Yeah, bona fide championship level player. And I hope that I'm wrong about, like, as the years go on, that history, I hope history remembers him as fondly as those, you know, like now that we got to see him currently, right? That it's not one of those when, you know, because there's players that have succumbed to that from like the 80s, right? That if you didn't, or 70s or even earlier, that if you didn't see them and you weren't aware of what they did, and then you go back and you're going to have the argument, or you're going to try to explain somebody how great a guy was, that just your box score career numbers are not going to represent just how awesome he really was.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a good point, because a lot of times I am also guilty of looking at the numbers and going, oh God, all right, like your stupid eye test, like the your uncle at a barbecue, yep, or your dad or your granddad who's like, I don't need any numbers, I can just use my eyeballs. Well, yeah, it's a combination of both, and I use the numbers as a supporting argument of what I'm seeing with my eyes. Manu's a great point though, because you could look at his numbers again and they're not flashy, and a lot of that is the pop effect that we mentioned. But if you watched him play, like, he was one of my favorite players to watch. And again, I'm sort of I'll gravitate towards anybody who can throw a pretty pass, and man, could he do that. And he was obviously just a very smart, sound, fundamental player. And I know that sounds like super nerdy and wonkish, but it was great to watch. He wasn't a great defender, but everything else about him I love to watch.
We'll certainly miss watching him for certain. All right, let's move on to the 76ers. And Adrian Wojnarowski put out a story yesterday. This used to be your calling card in Philly, Gons.
Yeah.
I know you know this franchise well. The GM stories that have come out, you know, it's kind of like it was off the radar there for a while. We saw, you know, it sounded like when it first happened and everything fell through with Colangelo, you kind of figured that they would hire somebody quickly, at least I did. But instead, they went through the draft and they went through free agency without a GM necessarily in title. The Mike Zarin name came out, as did some other names. Then the story dropped from Mark Stein that they had talked to Daryl Morey, which was quite bizarre considering his relationship with Sam Hinkie, and that he didn't want to go there and he was staying in Houston. And now you fast forward and then it just kind of falls off the radar completely until this week. And there are the stories out from the ownership there talking about general manager and kind of what they're looking for, and a odd timeline to say the least. All right, so what do you make of all of it?
It's the Sixers, man. This is hilarious. A couple of things here. It doesn't surprise me that they put out a statement, because the Sixers aren't stupid. The people who run the Sixers aren't stupid. They made a lot of money. They're billionaires many times over many of their ownership groups. So with the Sixers, I think they looked at it and they went, okay, we've gone through this in the past. We've taken some heat and we don't want to take any more heat on this, so we're going to update people. So they sent out this email and they're like, remember the guys who were doing stuff for us in the front office before? They're still doing stuff, but now they got new titles. So like, we're still on this. It feels like packaging and branding. Like Josh Harris, I think he learned something from the disaster that happened when they got rid of, or when they forced out Sam Hinkie, and Hinkie was like, all right, I'm going to hit the road. And like, they got a lot of critical PR on that one. And I think like in Philadelphia, they got smacked by the local media. They got smacked by the national media. And I didn't think they wanted that anymore. And I think that they realized with training camp approaching and preseason approaching that they're going to get a lot of questions about this. And so they tried to jump out ahead of it. And they were like, look, you know, we're still on this. And, you know, we don't want to compromise on hiring a GM. I think that was very carefully crafted language, but it made me laugh because it's like, you don't want to compromise on finding a GM that you haven't found. It's like, well, we're not going to go to the prom because we're not going to compromise on who we're going to bring. So we're just going to sit at home with our 12 cats and our vat of Ben and Jerry's. And eventually they're going to have to go out and get somebody, or just actually elevate either Ned Cohen or Mark Eversley or Alex Rucker to the full-time position, because this sort of half measure feels very Sixers managed PR fallout. That's what it feels like.
Smart time to drop it, though, because I can imagine a talk show in Philadelphia be like, yeah, and the Sixers, you know, they're indecisive about what they're going to do with their GM. So what about Carson Wentz, right? And like, I mean, no, does anybody care, like, honestly, like this week or the next week or, you know, until it all really gets going? What do you think? Or am I wrong about that? Do you think that would be a big topic in Philadelphia right now, them kind of just putting that out there that, hey, we're figuring it out?
No, right now it's not. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, this all, yeah, feels like very smart strategy, yeah, on their part, where they're like, hey, we know you're going to get questions about it eventually. We're going to jump out in front of it. And, you know, in the interim, all the guys that were handling it are still handling it, but we gave them a nice bump. This feels like it was managed and packaged, and they worked it over with some consultants, and they're like, let's roll that out. That'll be good. Here's my thing, though. They had a window here where they should have hired somebody. Like, you had said you expected them to hire somebody right away after Brian Colangelo. I didn't, because the timing was so god-awful. Like, it is next to impossible to hire somebody in that window right after the season ends, before the draft, before free agency, because any executive anywhere in the league, whether they're already running their own shop or whether they're an assistant, there's no chance of hiring them away if they're any good in that window, because they've got their own proprietary information and their own secrets for their teams, and they're prepping for the draft, and they know what their board looks like, and they know the free agents they're going after, and they know the kind of cap space that they have, and which guys are going to renounce and which guys are coming back. And it's like, to unplug somebody from their situation and put them into yours would be very difficult in that window. However, after free agency and after the draft, in this summertime window before training camp begins, boom, go out and find your guy. And it makes me nervous that there were reports out of Philadelphia, a guy, John Johnson, who does great reporting for WIP Sports Radio in Philadelphia, reported that his sources told him that the Sixers are thinking about rolling this hiring thing over until the 2019 offseason. Well, you've got a lot of things you've got to do next offseason. That's going to be your cap window closing, where you're going to go out and find a free agent or not find a free agent, and you damn well better have your general manager in place. And if it's going to be a guy who's already in-house, fine. But if it's going to be a guy that you're going to go out and get, you better find him before that, because things are going to get complicated, and trying to do them both at the same time doesn't make much sense to me.
Do you think it greatly hurt their offseason not having someone there?
That's a yes and a no question for me, because I look at it and go, I wasn't a huge Brian Colangelo fan, and he made a lot of mistakes, and moving on from Brian Colangelo makes sense to me. However, not having somebody to spearhead it, yes, in theory, it's Brett Brown, and I'm great with them just like taking stuff to Brett and being like, what do you think about this? Even though he's like not actually going out there and doing the front office duties. Yeah, I think part of it hurt them. Yes, I think not having one guy is a yes, but not having it be Brian Colangelo could have also benefited you, because who knows what he would have done with that money. Maybe he threw it at somebody he shouldn't have.
In fairness to him, he was in a very, very difficult situation, right? Replacing somebody that became beloved by Sixers fans. He did do good with the Bellinelli and Ilyasova. Like, the additions he made in the middle of the season were good moves.
Yeah, I'll give him credit for that. But that's also like two guys falling into your lap and way overperforming against their general production, right? I mean, like, how often does that actually happen? But sure, I'll give him credit for that. But then you could also, like, the reverse of that is sitting on Jahlil Okafor and refusing to trade him during the offseason and refusing to just let him go and buy him out, and instead insisting on trading him. And in order to do that, having to give up a second round pick for a guy in Trevor Booker, who then you moved on from. Like, that's one of the great all time idiot, like, why WTF trades in general manager history. I mean, like, it made my brain hurt. You could have just let him go, and instead you had to trade a second round pick to let him go. Like, tell me how that makes sense. So yes, he gets credit for certain things, but there are other little things like that that I think, like, if he had just been less prideful, he would have just found the simpler solution.
It's always interesting when it comes to management, because there are always people out there that would have a very strong opinion on who they would want to coach the team, and that this guy could be great for Ben Simmons, or this guy could be great for Embiid, or this guy would excite me if they hired him. And most, I would say the majority of fans, will have possibly a strong opinion on a coach. It's just not the same with a general manager. Or is it with you? Do you have an opinion of who they should go get? Is there a possibility that you would be greatly disappointed if they went and got blank?
Well, so you mentioned like them talking about some of the lieutenants, right? Like, so obviously Mike Zarin was a hot name, assistant for Danny Ainge in Boston. Gershon Rosas would have been a hot name, but instead they went after Daryl Morey directly, which I think is very curious. And there's been a lot of rumors in Philadelphia that part of them trying to wait out and this whole thing about how Josh Harris is saying we're not going to compromise is aimed at potentially, and we were just talking about the Spurs and whether the Spurs' run is over, if they can somehow pry R.C. Buford away from San Antonio. I wonder about that. Like, me personally, a Gershon Rosas would have been great. It doesn't sound like Zarin wants to go anywhere. A lot of people are talking about how he thinks he can just, you know, wait it out with Danny Ainge. And when Danny is done, he'll just inherit the Celtics, which would be perfect for him. I like the idea of the next up and coming, go out and find your hanky, right? The problem is they did, right? They previously did go out and find their hanky and then they fucked it up. So like, I wonder about them, like, going out and finding the next guy, because when they got one hot light put on them by the NBA and by Adam Silver and by other owners who were like, what are you doing with this tanking? They ended up forcing out the guy who would have been perfect for them. So I don't know. They've screwed up their general manager situation twice now. And now I'm worried about time number three.
Given that the situation is unresolved, do you believe there is a chance that Kevin O'Connor has been camped out outside of the Philadelphia 76ers facility yelling, Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand! Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand! In hopes that they will take him seriously and possibly name him general manager of the team.
I'm really worried about him. How close is he to having like a cardboard sign with Ben, like written with Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand and like a cup, he's passing the cup on Venice Beach. Like he's on vacation right now, Verno. And while on vacation, I guess he's like touring the conspiracy parts of his own mind for vacation because Ben Simmons went on James Corden and he pantomimed shooting with his right hand, which then sent off alarm bells in Kevin O'Connor's head.
Yes.
And he made a video that he then sent out on Twitter, like basically like, you know, zooming in on Ben Simmons shooting with his right hand. And I'm like, he should be out, I don't know, like on a beach somewhere with his toes in the sand and a drink in his hand. And instead he's breaking down James Corden videos.
I am paranoid because I have not heard from Kevin. I don't know. I don't know where he's been. Somebody from the Ringer needs to go check on him because there is a great possibility, you know, and he does not drink.
Yeah.
But what if he's like in his apartment with like a whiskey glass in his hand and he's gained 60 pounds and he's got a big beard and he's just mumbling to himself.
Yeah, he
shoots with the wrong hand. He shoots with the wrong hand. I tried to tell him.
He's rattling around his apartment like Howard Hughes. He's got tissue boxes on his feet. He's just talking to himself. I'm 100%. He might not come back. This could be the end for him. It might have set him over the edge.
Didn't you see the pantomime? Look at, he's on TMZ. Look at the way he puts his arm around the Jenner. What's her name? Is it Kendall?
I don't know. Kendall? I get them mixed up.
I think it's Kendall.
Isaac, which Jenner is it?
Look at the way he puts his arm around her.
I have no idea.
You don't know either?
No.
This is the reason why you are on these programs is because you're a millennial and you should be.
I am not a millennial. I'm Gen Z.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. It is Kendall Jenner.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. See? Because,
well, either way.
You know how I know is because I, what's her name's on the cover of the new, GQ, Kylie with Travis Scott. Yeah. And I read it on an airplane the other day. And, evidently like the article was saying she's the richest one. And I was like, damn. Like, she's got more money than the rest of them.
Pop culture Jenner talk with Verno and Gonzo, I feel like, is not going to ever be a big podcast here at The Ringer, but we did great just now.
Yeah, totally locked in on the Jenners.
Yeah.
All right, so hopefully, what we will find out is that Kevin O'Connor is able to return and he is okay. But I do agree with you. It has gotten to very dangerous levels over the shooting hand of one Ben Simmons. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll tell you about some of our sponsors. We'll be back after these words. The Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by Simply Safe. Here's why I'm a big fan of Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe is ready for anything that gets thrown at it. If a storm takes out your power, Simply Safe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line, Simply Safe is ready. Say they destroy your keypad or siren, Simply Safe will get you all the help you need. Here's what I love about this. Maybe it's overkill. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst case scenario, but Simply Safe is always ready, just in case. That's what makes it great. Now, Simply Safe could cost an arm and a leg. It should, but it doesn't. And that's because they're good people. They charge you what's fair, what's right. $14.99 a month. No contracts, no hidden fees. I recommend Simply Safe to everyone I know. You've got to check it out. Today, go to simplysafe.com/NBA. That's SIMPLISafe.com/NBA. And now back to the show. All right, guys. One of the things that has happened over the course of the last couple of weeks is NBA.com put out their 2018-19 NBA rookie survey and some super interesting results when they asked the rookies to vote on different things. The Kia Rookie of the Year Award, the rookies voted DeAndre Ayton and Colin Sexton in a tie for winning that. I wouldn't be all that surprised. I mean, obviously, those are not bizarre names by any means, right?
Right.
Either of those two guys would win that. So no big deal. What was the most fascinating is when you get to the second question, which is which rookie will have the best career? And the winner of that was Wendell Carter Jr., who obviously was super impressive in Vegas. Mm-hmm. But I am a bit surprised that when all the other rookies were asked, they voted Wendell Carter Jr.
Wendell Carter Jr. came out on top. That was interesting. Also interesting from who will have the best career was who was omitted. Did you notice who didn't make that list?
The guy that's already had a better career than all of them.
Yeah, he's already been a professional.
If he doesn't do anything else, right?
Yeah.
If he doesn't do anything else, Luka Doncic has had a better career than all of these guys.
Yeah, the only professional among these guys to date was left off of the which rookie will have the best career. I wonder how that happens because in the initial question about who could end up as the rookie of the year, Luka Doncic came in third behind DeAndre Ayton and Colin Sexton. So it's not like he wasn't on their mind. He got voted into that little group, that little cadre of potential rookies of the year. But then when they decided to like think about it over the course of a career, he got left off entirely. He wasn't even among the guys receiving votes.
Yeah, which rookie will have the best career? Wendell Carter won, but then tied for second, Kevin Knox,
right,
which isn't all that surprising. But Jerome Robinson was shocking to me.
Yeah, he plays for the Clippers, so I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Did you? Real quick.
What's that supposed to mean?
Real quick. I'll tell you exactly what it means. Did you see, Verno, as a quick aside here, did you see Lawrence Frank talking about, I put this in Slack the other day,
man.
And poor Isaac was like, what the hell does this mean? But did you see what Lawrence Frank said the other day?
I saw Isaac bitching about it, but I didn't click the video.
Yeah, so Verno, so about the Clippers, Lawrence Frank the other day did this interview. This is an exact quote. Other organizations have probably made this mistake. They're always talking about the future so that they ignore the guys in front of them. We want to love our guys every single day. Or put another way, the LA Clippers, who gives a shit about the future? So I feel like when you look at Jerome Robinson, I don't have a lot of hope for Jerome Robinson.
That is, well, obviously, listen, it is the perfect ethos for Doc Rivers as your coach.
It's amazing.
Right?
It's such a Clippers thing to say, like, we don't think about the future.
Yeah. The one that was of the rookie survey, we'll just get to one more because I thought this was fascinating. Which rookie was the biggest steal and where was he selected in the draft? And the reason that I take this seriously, and maybe I should take this rookie survey more seriously than I have, is they evidently, and I don't remember this, the rookies nailed Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Last year, they had him. Now, in fairness, it's after Summer League. And after I saw him at Summer League, me and Kevin did a whole show raving about him. I mean, he just looked so much better than literally everybody else outside of Tatum and maybe one or two other guys. But I mean, there were Summer League games where it looked like Donovan Mitchell was like a five-time NBA All-Star, like kind of playing in the Summer League.
Yeah.
He was that much better than everyone. So I guess it stands to reason that it's a little easier after you see him in that setting and he was so dominant that you could think he was going to be a steal. But this year they voted Keita Bates-Diop from Ohio State. And I will tell you, there were at least two NBA executives in Vegas that told me, as Jop was there, that they thought that was true too. That he was the one they were surprised dropped as far as he did in the draft. He was in the first round on boards, certainly on mocks. He was in the first round in many cases, and he almost fell out of the top 50. I mean, he went, you know, the bottom part of the second round.
Yeah, he was 48 to Minnesota. Yeah, yeah, but therein lies another, in the same way that I have my doubts about Jerome Robinson because of the organization he plays for, I look at Jop and I go, oh, yeah, what about the Tibbs effect, though? Because he plays like, if Tibbs could play four guys, he would play four guys, you know, like, or three. So his rotation is like that tight. I just wonder how much like they'd possibly get out of him.
Yeah. One thing I will mention, because we did mention Luka a little bit earlier in not getting votes on who would have the best career. I happened to be in New York City this past weekend and I walked into the NBA store and they have, as you can imagine, I mean, you walk into that first floor,
it's crazy,
and you've never seen more LeBron Laker gear in your life.
How many did you pick up? Did you pick up some Lakers gear?
I did not.
Oh, weird.
But as I was walking through there, you know, they have all the jerseys and they have all like the shirt jerseys and whatnot. And so I'm going through and it's interesting, all of the players that are displayed out there. And obviously at the NBA store, they've got a million, right? The only rookie one that I saw was Doncic.
Really?
They had a Doncic 77. Yes.
So you didn't...
He was the only rookie of any rookie in the NBA. He was the only one that I saw swag for.
Weird. So you didn't pick up Isaac, a future LA Clippers MVP, Jerome Robinson jersey?
They did not have Jerome Robinson.
That's weird.
No.
Shocking.
What floor would you...
If you're going to get a Clippers one, you've got to get the Gilgeous Alexander, simply because of the way it looks on the back of a jersey.
There's four floors at that store. What floor would you have to go to find Clippers gear? Like the fifth floor?
They have it in the back.
They got it in
the warehouse. I tell you this, the funniest was walking through there. And they do have one of the floors, and it just says one of the sections is clearance, right? And so obviously I walk back to the clearance. I just wanted to see what was on clearance. Dude, there's like 1,000 Kawhi Leonard jerseys and t-shirt jerseys. I'm talking about every variation. You want the camo jersey? You want the... I mean,
those are going to be throwbacks in a couple years. This will be perfect.
And the only other one, like there was one rack. It was like of jerseys and it said clearance, right? And this rack was, I'd say there's probably 150 jerseys on it, right? Maybe 5 Isaiah Thomas Cleveland.
Oh, wow. That's going to be a collector's item.
130 Kawhi Leonard in all different variations and 15 DeRozan.
Did you count all 130?
No, I did not. But that's about, I'm saying, I'm roughly estimating, if there were 150 jerseys, 130 of them were Kawhi, 15 of them were DeRozan, and 5 of them were Isaiah Thomas Cleveland.
You're playing fast and loose with the reporting numbers on this. You're tossing out 130. You're telling me you're just estimating. Next time I need you to count every single one.
Yeah, I've been pretty good at just eyeing it.
We're about accuracy here at The Ringer.
There you go. So I've got, Doncic was the only one, though, and I was kind of surprised. I figured they'd have some Knox stuff. Maybe there was Knox. It was. I'm sorry. Forgive me. There was Knox, because I remember thinking he's here because he's a Knick.
The Verno reporting stories from the NBA store are huge.
Oh, stop.
Next time we need you to go live, we'll send you with a video camera. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you this. Here you go. Here's fake news for you.
Tell me more of it.
I would say 75% of the people that were in the NBA store had a LeBron Lakers something. No lie. Like, that's what they were in line with.
I believe that.
Yeah.
It's going to be over LA, man. Can't go anywhere now.
It's a perfect segue. So you've seen the Kobe stuff, and you obviously did this interview with Rich Eisen recently. Genie Bus has gone out, because it's this whole thing that there are conflicted Kobe fans. Like, that is a reality.
It's so stupid.
Right? Because they've gone to war for Kobe for so long, and now LeBron is there, and everybody kind of says they'll warm up. And of course, Kobe's big thing, always every time he talks about LeBron, is he wants to remind everybody how many championships he's had, right? Yeah. And that winning is what matters. He just is never going to let anyone forget. In the end, you can have all the arguments about Kobe and LeBron, but Kobe is going to keep on reminding you that he's got the titles, and that that's what matters. And so it's his kind of passive aggressive way of making his own argument for himself, right? When he talks about it. But I am interested in this dynamic because you guys are boots on the ground there. Generally, what do you think has been the reception of LeBron being a Laker now in LA?
It's weird because there are the Kobe stands who are like, you know, I'm a Kobe guy and I didn't want LeBron. And I think it's just ridiculous because in general with Lakers fans, they're all about just like mercenary championships and like, how can we get it as quickly as possible? And like, let's add one more banner to the rafters. So I think ultimately what Kobe said about the part that I thought was great was Kobe saying that his fans would fall in line, being like, they'll do what I say and they'll eventually like LeBron because I tell them to.
If he wins, they'll love him.
Yeah.
Because do you think that Kobe Bryant is rooting for LeBron James to win? I say no.
That's interesting. I mean, like, Kobe loves being Kobe and he loves having all those rings, as you mentioned, and he loves his place in Lakers history. So, you know, does he secretly, surreptitiously want LeBron to fail? Maybe. But ultimately for his fans, I think it's exactly this. Like, he's LeBron, right? He's the greatest player of his era. I think Kobe was amazing. He's not LeBron. And ultimately, people are going to like look up when the season starts in mid-October and go, oh shit, LeBron's in LA and he's wearing a Lakers jersey and how cool is this? And everybody's going to fall in line. It's going to be fine.
I do wonder, I mean, listen, I do think people are underestimating, especially in the age of social media. Do you know how many hours and whatnot have been spent by Kobe fans arguing? Like making the argument against LeBron. I mean, you're talking years.
It's crazy.
Of energy, you know, standing up for their guy in the argument, right? While the world passed them by and everybody moved on to Jordan or LeBron, they're still fighting the good fight.
I don't understand
it. For Kobe, you know what I mean? They're out there on the front line for Kobe still.
It's pathological. I honestly don't understand. Like, that's always, to me, felt like the sports radio hot take. Like, call in right now and tell us who you think is better between Jordan and LeBron or Kobe and LeBron. I've never like gotten exercised about that because why can't you just go, oh, here, and this is like, you know, crazy nuance, but why can't you go, Jordan was very, very good, and so is LeBron. Like, isn't there space to appreciate all of them in their own right for their own purposes? Why does it have to be a binary either-or scenario where Lakers fans are like, no, goddammit, it was Kobe. I don't get that. I don't understand why you get out of bed and get heated about that.
Because that's what makes sports arguments fun.
Yeah.
That's what makes them fun. You know what I mean? Like, if you can't argue about something, you know, I mean, I remember, and this is interesting because it was a couple of weeks ago, Simmons did this podcast and I think he was talking to Francesa and he made this argument that I had not heard anybody really vocalize. And it was basically about baseball and that one of the things that hurt baseball was the absence of argument. When was the last time you had a baseball argument? Because the stats era just like destroyed everything. Cause you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the second that you start talking about, if I say I'm a Cardinals fan, right? So I say, listen, there's nobody better than Adam Wainwright in a big game, whatever. And then people are like, or Chris Carpenter, right? He was my big game guy. Went head to head with Roy Halladay once upon a time. And that was the year they won the World Series. I say, there's nobody I want in a big game better than Chris Carpenter. And then I'll let people tell me, you know what? Well, actually, his BABIP against so and so and so and so. Like, what? His batting average and balls in play. I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up. Right. Like, I mean, I just, it like bastardized all arguments about everything. And so you can't really have a great argument anymore. Basketball, we still get to, right? Because there's so much left beyond the stats.
Yeah.
Even if we go back to the Manu thing, I promise you, we're going to look in 10 years and someone's going to tell you that Manu Ginobili isn't nearly as good as you thought he was.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to be like, oh, screw you. You know what I mean?
I guess my point was that like at some point we cross over the line between discussion and debate into like fever pitch, like absolute lunacy. And that's where I think a lot of the Kobe defense lies, in that weird realm of like, you know, they've gone off their shit and I don't get it. I don't get getting that worked up about it. Like, you liked Kobe. He had an amazing career. Guess what? Now you also have LeBron. Just shut up and enjoy it. It's going to be great.
I hope it's great for them.
It's going to be great. How could it not be great? LeBron's amazing.
Hey, well, I'll tell you that. Well, he ain't winning this year. No. And when he doesn't, Oh, boy.
That's one thing I think is interesting. Are you prepared? And I wonder if Lakers fans are prepared or LeBron fans are prepared or even the NBA is prepared for the finals without LeBron. Because I just wrote a piece saying that like the team that he has right now, this weird cast of misfit toys that he's got around him, is not going to be the team that they have come playoff time. They'll make a trade. LeBron teams always do. They tinker with the roster. It'll be something else. However, it's highly unlikely that they get past the Warriors or the Rockets and make it into the finals. And so we're like barreling towards, for the first time in a very long time, it'll be 8 years, the finals without LeBron sounds and feels weird.
Nah, but if it's Golden State and, say, Boston, you'd have an embarrassing amount of talent.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be crazy. Assuming Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum have the careers that we think they're going to have, that would be one of those that you look back in 5-10 years and you're like, whoa, they were loaded. Because they will inevitably not all play their entire careers in Boston. And that would be assuming Kyrie and Hayward are healthy.
And then Kobe fans will go, see, told you so. He couldn't bring them there.
You know that they're waiting on that.
They're waiting on it.
They're sneaky waiting on that. I don't know if we've ever had a situation like this. Honestly, I don't know. If there's ever been a situation like this where you know deep down there are some people not thrilled with attaining the greatest player in the world.
I don't know. I don't understand it. Just you get to watch LeBron and it's going to be great. And he's wearing your jersey. And he's playing for the greatest organization in NBA history. And he's one of the two greatest players in NBA history. And that should be like an automatic. This is so exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you. John Gonzalez, you are the best, man. Thanks for filling in today for Kevin. And if you get a chance in L.A., go try to find him.
I'm
going to
go
he's okay.
Knock on his door and see if he's still breathing.
Just somebody check on the guy for sure. All right. Thanks, Isaac. Thanks, John. That does it for another Ringer NBA show. If you dig what you're hearing, go give us a rating and review on iTunes. And we will talk to you next week.